All right, all right. Welcome back to the Educated Guest Podcast. I'm your host, Zaref, a.k.a. Caesar Does It. Follow me on them Twitters. That's C-Z-A-R-E-F-F. This is episode 15, and my guest today is Dr. Ricky Medina. Before we get into business, though, you know how I do it. I got to run that disclaimer. The opinions that we express today belong to myself and my guest, and in no way, shape, or form do they reflect those of our employers or the associations that we work for. Having said that, we're just going to jump right into this. I want to let you know that Dr. Ricky Medina, he is a local guy, Chula Vista to be exact, by way of San Diego. He's got a lot to share with us. He did his doctorate on something called sacred purpose, and I want you to hear about it. We're just going to jump right into this. All right, Educated Guest Podcast, episode 15. All right. Welcome back to the Educated Guest Podcast, episode 15. I'm sitting here with Dr. Ricky Medina.
What's up?
Welcome to the show, my man. Welcome to the show. Ricky and I are good friends. We may not see each other for months, but we always have kind words and share great stories with each other. And I've known you for probably close to 20 years now. And you and I have had very different paths through education, but somehow we always circle back and meet each other. So we got a lot to talk about today. You've got a lot of experience. You've got a lot of knowledge. Got your doctorate a couple years ago. You're doing a lot of great work. There's just so much we got to talk about. But you know how we get down on the Educated Guest Podcast. You know how we start. Where are you from, my man? You're a local boy. Tell us where you went to school.
All right. Yeah, definitely. First off, man, I want to definitely thank you for bringing me up on the show and have an opportunity to just share some words, give a little context as well. It's spring break, right? And so definitely enjoyed some time off from the daily grind. And so, yeah, we've been spending a couple of days out at the beach. So I definitely appreciate that. But, yeah, I'm from Chula Vista. Born and raised here in Chula Vista to a family of five boys. My mom and dad both, bought a house here. They're from, my mom was from L.A. My dad's from Calexico. They bought a house here. In Chula Vista, raised my myself and my brothers. I'm the youngest of five, and went to Hilltop. Went to Hilltop Elementary School. Went to Hilltop Middle. Went to Hilltop High School. And right there in Chula Vista, man, definitely got a lot of love for CV. In high school, I would have to say that I was very involved in the music scene. We were very proud of Chula Vista and all the good music that came out of Chula Vista.
Now, you're bringing that up, so I'm going to go there with you. Your wife is your high school sweetheart.
That's right.
And when you guys got married, that was the first time I actually saw B-side players. Yeah. And I had no idea who they were, but I was like, these guys sound fucking great.
Yes.
So that's some of that awesome Chula Vista music that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I so probably around middle school, I got really into skateboarding, skateboarding scene, and here in Chula Vista. And there was a skate shop, RC Surflines, off Telegraph Canyon. And I'd frequent that space once in a while, you know, because there wasn't a lot of skate shops and there wasn't the internet to be able to get gear from. So I would go in there, man, and just look at stickers and everything. And there was some local young people there, Tim Gonzalez and Sergio Hernandez and Barry Kelman. And those brothers right there were not only great skateboarders, but they were musicians, and they were in a band at the time called Amenity. And so, as you know, got really interested in into skate music and hardcore music, and but not only that, also found hip hop. And so, the beauty about just urban music and music from the neighborhood, right, is that it took us in different ways and different spaces. And but eventually, Amenity became a band called House of Suffering, which really merged hip hop and hardcore music. And House of Suffering eventually breaks up, and a bunch of those, a few of those members, Sergio Hernandez specifically, became a group called B-Side Players. And so, Josh Hernandez, Paul Hernandez, Carlos Paez, all those brothers would practice over off Sweetwater Studios, which is over by the DMV, over off of, what is that, 4th Avenue, right?
Yeah, it's where 4th meets 3rd or whatever.
And they had a little studio there. Really? And yeah, bro, and good music, you know. And what's ironic is POD had a studio there as well. Uh-huh. And we'd have shows there and just crazy, crazy good stuff that came out of there. But
Is dropping some old Chula Vista history right now.
For sure.
If you're from here, you probably know it, but I am not from here, so that's all news to me. That's dope. You're dropping some jewels right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think too. I know part of your podcast is also introducing the teachers, right? Mentors.
I was going there. I was gonna take you back there. I was gonna say, give it to me.
For
So who are the teachers that affected your life in any way?
Well, on that same note, you know, I feel like I've gotten that in the classroom and I got it outside. And I feel like music has done has been a space for me, man, to grow, grow intellectually, grow personally, spiritually. Mm-hmm. So when we look at music specifically, growing up with Public Enemy, mm-hmm. Really helped develop self critical consciousness and to critique my community and the issues in the community. I remember my first concert, bro, was Public Enemy at the Sports Arena with Big Daddy Kane.
I went to
and
that.
Digital Underground.
I went to that.
And bro, it was amazing. It was right. And so, but yeah, I used to rock the Public Enemy gear. Mm-hmm. I had the little medal, the leather medallion, PE, you know. Additionally, I would say KRS-One was instrumental. And you know, I definitely like the good Tribe and De La and and so when we look at the classroom, you know, I would have to say there's been one instrumental teacher that I had through my youth, and that was in high school, Hilltop High School. At the time it was Grace Coe. And she's still out in education. I think she works for the county. I actually ran into her a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. and introduced her to my kids, and I said, hey, you know, like, she was one of the only ones, man, that ever spoke to me about college. And here I was, man, I had a, you know, I graduated with like a 3.47, and I know that doesn't sound like nothing these days, you know, that doesn't sound impressive at all,
but back then it was actually very decent.
Yeah, but back then it was like, that was some work, right? That was all A's and B's.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the only one that asked questions like, hey, have you written, your statement, personal statement? Have you thought about applying to college? What colleges are you interested in? And so she was huge in that. And not only that, though, like her pedagogy, her teaching, her curriculum was good.
And what kind of a teacher was she?
She was it was English.
Okay.
It was my English teacher. So I had her, I think, 10th and 11th grade English.
Okay.
And I was in the FLAGS program at Hilltop, which is Foreign Language and Global Studies. And I really didn't know what that meant at all, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what kind of program I was getting into. I was like one of the program was first beginning and starting up. But what I do remember is that she was very attentive about introducing us to multicultural literature. And so I read Things Fall Apart.
Even back then, Chinua Achebe.
Yeah.
I read that in the eighth grade, man.
Definitely.
That's dope.
Yeah, and not only that, but there was also Mr. Harmon, another English teacher who exposed us to Urrea's work, Across the Wire, uh-huh. or Farewell to Manzanar.
Okay.
So it was a lot of good literature. But Grace Coe, Mrs. Coe, she also would give us these projects, man, that were like, hey, bring yourself into this project. So we were able to incorporate music. We were able to incorporate video, and in my skateboard urban hip hop culture, I was able to bring that to the classroom. But then I want to say, I'll get back to your question, which is the teachers in college. I had Gail Perez, another powerful professor that really was instrumental in putting the right books in my hands. And so there I remember reading Always Running by Luis Rodriguez.
Okay.
And I felt like another time I read Rain of Gold.
Okay.
You know, so literature is really what started to speak to me and to my path.
So what did you end up getting your degree in over there
at
USD?
I did a diversified liberal arts.
Uh-huh.
So I was in education.
Okay, so you knew you wanted to be a teacher.
Yeah, or? So no, not really, man. Man, I've been all over the place. I think like I was to some extent, I liked business. But when I went to the business school at USD, dude, I was pretty clear, like, okay, this isn't my path, right? because everyone there, they just didn't look like me, bro. Right. So nobody looked like me there, period. But when I went to business school, like I felt like I clearly stuck out, like this wasn't for me. And it was really a different form of business. I was a different, you know, my understanding of business was much different. So I started looking different ways. And at the time, man, I had the best job of my life. I was, at the time, the best job to be able to start off with. I was a lifeguard.
Okay.
And I just watched kids and made sure they didn't drown, and I got paid good money and with the city of Chula Vista, and eventually I was able to teach swimming lessons.
Okay.
And also a really good job, man. Just, you know, had such a good time in the summer, man. Just stress free, just enjoying young people and teaching them how to swim, man. We would make up crazy songs. We would just have so much fun with the kids, man. And so at that time I started thinking like, well, what's my life about? Well, kids are kind of cool, you know, and I started to piece things together, and I said, you know what? I'm really into this critical consciousness, this curriculum, this literature, you know, around, multiculturalism, around social justice, around Chicano,
around people having their own voice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I said, hey, let's try out education, you know, and so I started some of those classes, and from there, man, it just stuck, and then I'm gonna just finish this last part with the other teachers that I've had that have been instrumental, is in finding myself as an educator. René Núñez was huge, and I remember René Núñez. He was at the time he was a professor at San Diego State, and he used to do these. Like cohorts, man, he would pull people together and start to teach him around critical pedagogy and Paulo Freire. And he would pull these people together and he, you know, just out of like just people who wanted to read and talk about work and pedagogy. And so he would bring us together and we would talk in community spaces and start to really critique and question the direction of education. And so that really helped me in my who I was becoming as an educator. And then today, I feel like there's some individuals that I really fall back to, always that I can pick up a phone and call.
Okay.
And they're huge, man. Alberto Ochoa.
Okay.
At San Diego State, he's like the godfather to me.
Yes, he is.
And then also. Some individuals I've had a chance to work with and that have been beautiful people in education is Karen Cadero Kaplan, also out of San Diego State. And then I did some work. I did my PhD over at Claremont, and I had an opportunity to work with and meet Lourdes Arguez.
Okay.
She's no longer there anymore, but she worked under the realm of contemplative pedagogy. And then also Carl Cohen. And he's right now with the State Board of Education, California.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also, he's somebody who I've looked up to because he's committed and dedicated an entire life, not only in education, but to making sure that our classrooms are in good hands.
Okay. You know? All right.
And so, yeah. And then I got to give a shout out to Jerry Theo. Maestro Jerry Theo, I've heard his name up on this podcast before, and
one time before,
yeah,
with Macedonio.
Yeah, he's
I've never had the pleasure of meeting the man, but he sounds like a very powerful, a very strong soul when it comes to guidance. I don't know. Talk just a little bit about what effect Jerry Theo has had on you.
Yeah. So, you know, when I think of like even if I think of my own work in the classroom, I believe in the teaching of the heart and the mind. I think of that holistic work. When we work with youth and young people and people in general. And I think Jerry Theo does that,
mm-hmm.
you know, in his work and his speaking. Man, he speaks to your mind. He can go with the intellectual path and really help you to see theory mm-hmm. and unfold it. And he can talk about specific scholarly work and authors, or he can just straight go to your spirit and talk about the work that your ancestors have been doing. And so that's what I appreciate. I appreciate to get that holistic view, holistic lens from him. And really, like I said, I feel like he provides that. He provides a lot of good healing-based work.
All right, all right. And just before we move on, I do want to acknowledge and give a special shout-out to Rene Nunez that you brought up. I hope that he is resting in peace, yet at the same time looking down on us and guiding us in our journey through education and helping youth, because that was really what he was all about. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would spend his own time just guiding us and talking with us about education, about politics, anything we wanted.
Parents. So. He was huge with parents, with the Parent Institute for Quality Education. I mean, you're talking about volunteering time, and he would get together at schools in the nighttime and pull parents together and do a lot of work around advocacy, you know. And I can tell you that schools completely shifted and changed to service the community as a result of him just creating a space. That's what he did, man. He created a space for people to challenge, for people to critique, for people to feel empowered. And so, yeah, man, he's a, I know that whenever I go into speaking spaces, man, I always try to acknowledge him, you know, because he did a lot of work for our community here, specifically education in San Diego.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. We're going to take us a small break and then get back to Dr. Ricky Medina in just a second. One of Ricky's brothers, Armando Medina, is part of a new business opening up here locally. So if you live in San Diego, especially Chula Vista, you're going to want to check them out. They're called the Sanctum Ale House, and they serve the finest brews on tap, micro brews, craft beer from all the way from Mexico to Los Angeles. They're going to be opening up this Saturday, April the 8th, and they are right on the corner of Broadway and Main in Chula Vista. The exact address is 2638 Main Street. I want to see you there. They got plenty of intimate space to chill out with your friends, or if you think you're all that, you can hang out at the Monk's Altar and converse with locals. Again, that's the Sanctum Ale House, April the 8th. Be there. All right, let's get back to the interview. All right, let's switch it up. Let's talk a little bit about your personal journey through education. Yep. Let's talk about how you started. Where you started teaching at first?
Okay. Yeah. Hey. So I know you hit up the disclaimer, and I've had an opportunity to. I think all of us, you know, in education, man, we've seen good and bad. You know, we've seen what is that? You know, rainbows and. I don't know, peaks and valleys, right?
Absolutely.
And I think that's reflective of no matter where you go. And no matter what school site I've been or what district I've been, I've met amazing people.
Uh-huh.
And I've met amazing families and amazing students and amazing teachers. And I've seen powerful classroom instruction. And so I think that's regardless of where. And I've seen the other side, right? I've seen the things that were like you take home with you and you, man, I can't believe that happened.
It hurts your heart.
Yeah, absolutely. Or you feel that conflict with people like, man, like this just doesn't feel good. So I'm going to definitely try to stay on the positive. But nevertheless,
and I'm not going to try to take you to the negative. I'm really not. Ricky is the first educator that I interview that has experience in both a traditional public school setting and then a charter school setting.
Yep.
So, and in no way am I trying to take you anywhere to where it's going to be a public versus charter discussion.
Yep.
Your experience is much larger than that, that small conversation to me.
Cool.
Okay. So we start out with, where was you teaching at first, my
1997,
man?
Brother. I was at Vista Square Elementary School in Chula Vista. In Chula Vista Elementary
West
School
Side,
District.
West Side, Chula Vista, an West older Side. School, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely, man. It was, and it is, you know, still today, man. It's on the west side of Chula. I went there. It was in between Feaster. I was going to either head to Feaster or I was heading to Vista Square. And Vista Square's doors opened first, and so that's where I warmed up. And I started there teaching, you know, starting it up sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent 10 years at Vista Square Elementary School. There I was able to be involved with some great programming. We ran a circle there. I know you interviewed Macedonio, and through Mas's mentorship as well, we were able to bring circles. So we did a lot of young circles there for young people, specifically males, but there was a female one as well. Mm-hmm. We ran a fatherhood program, Call Me Papa, where we were really trying to bring males onto campus and during after school hours to play with kids, to play with. So we did everything from sports to board games to arts and crafts, but we would have even like men circles there and talk about what does a male presence look like on school grounds.
Okay.
You know, and because I know for me, you know, that story where, you know, and like many, you know, their dad really didn't come to school, right? Mm-hmm. They weren't in that space. And so, I did that. And then, but I was always interested, man, in pedagogy and curriculum. I was always bringing in, you know, critical consciousness. I was also always bringing in, like you mentioned, voice. I was always bringing in critique, those concepts of critical pedagogy. Mm-hmm. I was always bringing in concepts where young people were not just learning how to function in society, but they were learning in ways how to create transformation within their own lives, within their own families, their own communities, and the macro, right? And so I started to play with a lot of that stuff. I had opportunity to teach every single subject area and try to introduce and integrate all these components into. But what happened is eventually I started getting, you know, itchy, and I noticed at the school there was a need, and it was in the after-school programming at the time. A lot of our students, they didn't know what to do with our students after school.
Okay.
They had nowhere to go, so they started, one of the things was, I remember locking the gate. Hey, school's closed, you can't be on campus. Because what happened is the kids would kick it on campus after, and there would be problems. The kids had nothing to do. So they would be, you know, there would be something going on. So they started to lock the gates. They started to, you know, and we had an after-school program at the time. It was like 200 students. And so I came up with an idea and said, hey, you know what? Let me do it. Let me create an after-school program or work with an after-school program to basically open it up to any young person at our school that wanted to be in the program, service all of our students. And so for 2 years, we created a program called Lead Leaders Engage in After School Decisions. And it had an academic component where we brought in teachers to do a lot of after school work, from tutoring services. But then we also went into the other parts, which was we did the arts, we did sports, mm-hmm. we had a fishing club, we had everything, bro. And I remember we had almost the whole school, man, in the mix. And I was very involved in the pursuit of getting funds and grant money. And we had a, you know, some college staff. So I went on teacher special assignment to do that.
Okay.
And so at that time, I started to see, like, dang, like, you know, my role in education just didn't have to be specifically in a classroom teacher setting. And what that did is that it allowed me to start to go in different angles and see. And so
liked what you were doing.
Yeah.
You're getting your hands in a lot of different areas.
Yep.
You saw a need. You saw kids hanging around after school doing nothing. And when you let kids do nothing, most of the time they'll find bad shit to do.
Right.
So you designed basically an after school program for them.
Yep.
And at first, I'm willing to guess you didn't get paid for that, but then you found the monies for it.
And I remember I met up with you because we went over to Monroe Clark.
Uh-huh.
Because Monroe Clark at that time had a respectable after school program. Like somebody, so I was hungry, bro. I was like, hey, where? So
we had an awesome program.
So I remember heading over there and I saw you, but that was what we were trying to model. And I think that was even new, right? Because what I mean new is, I mean, like, you started to see schools really try to model and pilot and create their own after school programming that would service specifically their students.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that school, they knew which teachers to go to. They knew the teachers knew the students' needs, mm-hmm. so we could create really specific. But yeah, I mean, the funding was, you know, the school decided to go with me as a teacher on special assignment. So I left the classroom, and my work day started at like 2, and you know what I mean? And it ended late, man. But my role became a lot more, right? It became a lot more. It was around a director, uh-huh. is really what it was. 'Cause I had to manage staff. I had to supervise the program. and create programming and look at funding. And so that was the first time where I felt like I got a little taste of something different. And yeah. and I was really open at the time to see like, hey man, what's my life about as an educator or an education? Important. And see like where am I going? And I think I'm still in that space today, bro. Like I feel like I don't really know. I just know where I'm at currently. And I know that I'm always hungry, man, for something new. Mm-hmm. I'll sit in a presentation or I'll read an article or read something and I'll be like, dude, this is it. This is where I want. This is the new step, right? And so, and then I'll be like, okay, well, how can I now make that happen, right? And mm-hmm.
So let's continue along your timeline here. So you said at this time you are also going to school to get your master's in curriculum instruction. Mm-hmm. You were also playing around with pedagogy. After that, after you left Vista Square.
So I remember at the time, I was like, hey, let's check it out, you know. And so I wound up heading into the charter world. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it wasn't so much a risk because I was still considered a district teacher.
Okay.
I wanted to stay on the west side of Chula Vista.
Okay.
And I wanted to be around good people that I felt like were like-minded. And so I had a boy over at Mueller and Mueller Charter School, and he was like, hey man, you know, we got this stuff going on, and come check it out. You know, we're gonna be opening up a middle school, and so one of the things I really appreciated about them is Mueller is once again the concepts of innovative, the concepts of like I felt like when I went to Mueller and talked to him, they said like, there's a space for what you are doing here. The curriculum that you're talking about.
We want it here.
Yeah. But we're open to it.
Mm-hmm.
That pedagogy that you're doing, like we're open to that. Like there's a home here for that. And it's the same community.
Did you get a sense that that wouldn't necessarily be welcomed or? It would be it would be a slower process if you had tried to do that in a traditional public school.
I've had a lot of little like crazy things happen. I remember like just giving you an example, big supporter of the United Farm Worker Movement, Cesar Chavez, and so I decided at one point and this was at my first school to put up next to the United States flag, the United Farm Worker flag.
Okay.
And I posted it up, right? And okay. It was there. And I remember an admin coming up and saying, hey, like, that's not allowed. Take that down right now.
Okay.
And then also I feel like I heard stories, though, right? I heard stories where, like you're not going to be able to get away with what you're doing in other spaces,
uh-huh,
right?
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't necessarily feel like there was tension that was against me. Because I only knew what I had at that space, right?
All right.
So I didn't really feel like I just wanted to go into a space where people were like, yo, like I feel that. I feel in what you're doing and we're cool with it.
Yeah, let's try it.
And I don't think a lot on these things, man. I didn't think a lot about it. I didn't like reflect. I didn't be like, should I transfer or not? I was just like, yo, like, let's find out what this is all about. You know, I want to explore more charter. I wasn't trying to be like, this is my home for the rest of my career. Right.
I got you.
So I was like, let's try it out. And so I stayed at Mueller Charter School for 8 years. And then I dipped. I went over to, now I'm at CVLCC High School.
Uh-huh.
And I'm there working within many roles. But once again, man, one of the things that's consistent is you're going to see is that, right, this newness, trying new things,
uh-huh.
Getting involved in new projects, really trying to understand this world of education and how we can take it to really meet the needs of our students.
Okay.
And specific communities.
Okay. And on that note, we are going to then discuss it's kind of leading into your doctorate work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you decided to go and get your doctorate. I mean, after a few years here, you made a decision. Yeah. It's a huge decision, by the way.
Yeah.
So you had to talk to the wife, let her know, going back to school, to school, it's going to take some money, some time. And you settled on the program at the Claremont Colleges. And, mm-hmm. and is it a joint program between Claremont and State?
Yeah, it's a joint program at State and uh-huh. San Diego State University and Claremont grad. And a lot of good people have went through that program.
Okay.
A lot of good stuff. And I didn't do a lot of investigating as well, man. And, you know, like I was mentioning earlier, I kind of just do it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I definitely had a conversation with the family around what was going to take, you know, or the commitment, the level of commitment. And, yeah, man, so I got involved in it. Very, very, it was intense. A very intense process.
Now, obviously, being a doctorate of education, it's mm-hmm. got to be focused around education. Yep. But how did you choose your specific thread there? I mean, you know, that's a big deal,
right?
Because you got to build up a lot of background information. Then you got to take your stand and you got to defend your stand, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So you did yours on.
So my work is on social is on sacred purpose.
Sacred purpose.
And so, yeah, let me talk a little bit about that. You know, I knew that I wanted, so I have, it's a dual, there's dual constructs that I'm working with here. And one was, is that looking at a pedagogy that we can utilize within our schools and within our communities. And so I started within the pedagogy, this is where I started to build my framework, right? And mm-hmm. what did I want within this? And so we really looked at these concepts such as holistic education, which was once again is the teaching of the heart and the mind. We look at Jeff Duncan Andrade's work around he calls them pedagogy of hope, but it really looks at relationships, uh-huh. right? We did some, you know, utilized a lot of the teachings from the brothers and sisters out of Tucson, Arizona, called critical compassionate intellectualism. So I started to bring these things and critical pedagogy. I started to bring these things together, and I started to say, like, to myself, like, yo, but what's still missing?
Mm.
And once again, the brothers and sisters in Tucson, then they started to come out with these maíz-based teachings. So they come up with these things called the tezcalipocas. So they start talking about these different ways we can utilize pedagogy still, looking at more of a culturally relevant pedagogy. And I said, oh, yo, that's it. And me myself, you know, I follow the indigenous traditions. And so I say, you know, man, like, how do we bring these indigenous traditions into this pedagogy as well? Because, man, we've been on this Western paradigm for so long. Like, how do we bring in the non-Western to really try to balance this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in the concept of, there's this concept called the pedagogy of the ego. I'm sorry, it's called the ego and the condor prophecy. And the ego and the condor prophecy really talks about the energies, right? It really talks about north and south of the continent, mm-hmm. specifically of the Americas. But it really talks about energies. And the ego energy is this masculine energy. It's more around dominance and around science and industrialism. And then your condor energy is more around the feminine. It's more around spiritual, mm-hmm. right? And I started to look at, man, that's how our schools operate, right? We have these different paradigms, and how do we bring them together? So I started to look at, man, like, a lot of this pedagogy work that I want to bring into the classroom is we need to tap more into these indigenous traditions. And so... So I basically I'm in a space sitting down listening to one of our teachers, Jerry Thiel, and he says the word sacred purpose, and he uses the concept something like, do you know your sacred purpose? And I was like, dude, like, for whatever reason, it gave me goosebumps, man.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things where it spoke to my heart, this concept that he was talking about, sacred purpose. I didn't really understand it, but he was speaking things like, do you honor your sacred purpose? You know, are you watering it daily? Concepts such as that. And I started to say, man, like, what is this, right? And I started to question a lot about my life. What is my sacred purpose? What is sacred purpose? And so I started to unfold and really look into in this PhD program, the concept called purpose in life.
Okay.
And so we call it in, And right, and that Western is positive youth development, PYD. Mm-hmm. There's tons of research around it. Right now they talk about grit and all these different constructs, but purpose is one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I started to say, you know, purpose is cool, but, you know, part of that research, you look at kids talk about their purpose. My purpose is to get rich and to get a mansion and have a bunch of cars and have a bunch of women and have, you know, and I started to look at, man, well, what does purpose look like in indigenous traditions?
Oh.
And so this is where the my dissertation really looks at is how do we incorporate sacred purpose into pedagogy? How do we incorporate it into curriculum? And what is it? And so I think that's the part where we started. Where is it? What are the what's the definition? What are the teachings? What are the stories? And so that was my journey.
Okay.
And I, you know, initially there's nothing, you know, you got to do a literature review. There's nothing on sacred purpose. Huh. You Google it. There's nothing, right? You can look at purpose in life. There's a whole lot. There's nothing. So my thought was, is that, part of my dissertation then is to unfold these, to uncover these stories. And so the first half of my dissertation was, to travel and to interview and gather the stories of elders, mm-hmm. and community identified elders, and ask them questions such as, what is sacred purpose? You know, what do you know about it? What are the teachings? And does it have a place in educational system, and how, right? And so, man, we met kind of like the work you do, brother. We met and talked and talked and talked. And so, first of all, I had to find these four elders. Well, I had to find elders. And you don't want too many, right? Because you want to really gather down, narrow down your research. Mm-hmm. I wanted to also get individuals that were, they have palabra, which is like nobody's going to question this research, right?
Okay.
Nobody's going to question if is this true or not, right? Because they're going to be like, oh, damn, like this person's legit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I had to do a lot of work around that, and I wound up getting four elders that I'm very grateful to this day. I continue to stay in contact with them. They're amazing people. One of them is Grace Sesma. Another one is Dr. Saintly out of U of A.
Okay.
Roberto Rodriguez. And another one is Mama Cobb. On Hilberta Cobb, and the last one was Jerry Thiel, once again, that I've mentioned.
Okay.
And so I spent lots of time, man, hours and hours and hours with these individuals, and I asked them questions, and they were able to share these teachings, and I'll share some briefly. Jerry Thiel speaks about Garay Corazon, and he talks about the teachings that that we all have our sacred purpose, and our job is to live with our sacred purpose. We all have value. And the second element was to honor others' sacred purpose. The third element he brings in is to live your life with honesty and love and do things out of love. And then the fourth element that he really spoke about was you need to create spaces that are consistent. It's like that heartbeat, man, that are consistent. Mm-hmm. And that provide a space of trust and provide a space of health and of compassion. And so he spoke a lot. And so that's when I go in different places and I get to talk about, hey, sacred purpose, what does it mean from this elder? And I talk about Jerry Thiel's work of, he calls it in Yolotl and Itzli, right? In heart and face.
Okay.
And then from Mama Cobb, man, Mama Cobb is, she's an OG.
Where's she from?
She's right now in San Jose or in Sacramento.
Uh-huh.
But she was from a little pueblo, man, in Mexico somewhere, right? And mm-hmm. She was very involved in bringing Danza Azteca to Califas, to California.
Okay.
But she talks a lot about Maiz teachings, and she talked a lot about the calendar. And she, this was the word she uses, that sacred purpose is really that we are keepers of the fire. And she spoke to a lot of the sense that all of us within us have fire,
okay,
within us, and that we, and that's even reflected on the Aztec calendar. And that we are, our job is to continue to, we're keepers of the fire, keepers of the traditions, keepers of the ceremonies, keepers of the culture, and our job is to continue them. Dr. Saintly, he spoke a lot about creative resistance, and he spoke about that sacred purpose is creative resistance, meaning that we are here to create and to resist at the same time. So we talked about an artist. An artist's job is to create, but to create with resistance, mm-hmm. right, to address the issues of our times. And then Grace Sesma talked a lot about, all of these have tons. So these are just their teachings that were the most favorite of mine. But okay. She spoke about a calling of the grandmas. And she said that sacred purpose is really about paying attention to your dreams, paying attention to the messages that are constantly happening, right? Uh-huh. And that sometimes these messages are not positive, but they push us to be able to follow our sacred purpose.
We're going to take us a little break and get right back to the interview. It is a deep one. It is long, and I hope you listen to it all. The sounds you hear in the background, some old school stuff, that Camp Low, Cooley High, all the way from 1995. I want to go ahead and run that disclaimer for you one more time to let you know that these opinions belong to myself and my guest, and in no way, shape, or form do they reflect those of our employer or the associations that we work for. Please keep that in mind. And now let's get back to the interview. You basically had to build a framework or build the bridge of this sacred purpose into education, yep. right? So how does that translate to what people like me do on a day-to-day
For
basis?
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
For sure. So at the end of the day, after everything, it was this complete pedagogy, right? Because we can't just do one thing. We can't just say, oh, okay, sacred purpose is going to save everything, right? Mm. But it became part of this pedagogy where sacred purpose is now aligned with critical pedagogy, holistic education, Duncan Andrade's work around relationships, mm-hmm. the brothers and sisters work around critical compassion, intellectualism, concepts such as project-based learning, all these different concepts. But what we see is we need sacred purpose in there. Okay. And so sacred purpose is really honoring every single young person, every single individual that walks into a classroom space, that they have a sacred purpose. They have gifts, they have talents, they have passions, and that they were sent to this world, right, to manifest those. And when they can, then they have an opportunity to walk with that sacred purpose. But it's really how does it look in classroom? Well, it is the beginning is that you have to see somebody's sacred purpose first. And so it reminds me a lot of the teachings of restorative justice right now, where they talk about relationship building. Mm-hmm. And it really is the same, is very similar of a concept, which is when you see somebody walk through your classroom door, do you see them? Do you really see them? Do you see all of them? Do you see everything that they bring with them, the good and the bad? And today, you know just as well as I do, man, that our political climate is, unfortunately, man, there's some of the students that come through our doors, and it's because of their documentation or lack of, mm-hmm. or because of a way they look, that we as a society do not value them anymore and their sacredness. And so really sacred purposes is that basic teaching, man, is just honoring them as they're coming into this space and creating spaces. So when I look at my classroom, right, it's relationship building. It's how I look at a student and interact with them. But it's also about what my curriculum looks like, right?
Okay.
And so we
Speak
do,
on it.
Yeah. So like, for an example, we do a lot of work and we do a lot of work. Like, for example, if it's literature, right, we'll do a lot of character analysis around how does this unfold, right? What is this person's purpose, you know, sacred purpose, and we unfold that, we talk about it. We just invite that word more into it. And that some people are uncomfortable with the word sacred, we talk about purpose then, right? And I'll tell you that teenagers, bro, are the ones who want this the most, because this is the first time in their life that they ask the questions, who am I?
Yeah.
It's the first time in their life where they're going to look in the mirror and say, am I important? What value do I bring to this world?
They start to see themselves as separate from their mom and dad.
Absolutely.
They start to see themselves as different from their friends, mm-hmm. but they really don't know who they are at this time.
Right.
And so the sacred purpose you're seeing helps to address that, so long as there's a person there to kind of show them that.
Right. Yeah. Or like even invite those conversations, you know, even invite those conversations around like what is, you know, what is purpose, man? What is life about, you know? And we even look at a lot of social constructs. So you see this works well with a literature-based class, a humanities-based program, humanities-based class, or even works very well with a sociology, like I get to teach a geography class, human geography, right? So it works well because we do a lot of ideology work, ideology and how it impacts human interactions. So it works easy with those. Right. Yeah. But for the others is really about what do your interactions look like with young people as but see, it's not even just young people, because I look at my work at San Diego State there in being able to work with teachers. And a lot of times that's the main question, because so at San Diego State, I get to teach a class, foundations for democratic schooling. And it's really about who are you as an educator?
Like, okay, what's so your the class is only for teachers. It's for people that are in.
In the graduate,
in the teacher education program, or master's, or what?
So it's it is a master's program.
Okay,
and so they're in, you know, it's a 2-year program, but the first class is really a foundations class, right? And it really gets to who are you, man? What's your ideology?
Uh-huh.
And so this is where sacred purpose fits well, is because it's that same concept is like, who are you? What drives you in education, the field of education? And what helps, what happens is it allows us to become, this conversation allows us to become better educators, because we really start to analyze our profession and analyze our heart in that profession, and our, and like I like the work of Parker Palmer, who talks about really this concept of living an undivided life, right? In his book, The Courage to Teach. And The Courage to Teach really is this, it's really more about how do we manifest our love for and our passion for working with individuals, for creating spaces, for in empowerment, and for developing better communities. And so once again, though, I feel like the conversations around sacred purpose really allows us to go in those directions. So sacred purpose for me is not only in my high school classroom setting, but it's also in a university setting.
Okay, so who are some of the people out there in that realm of education that you read or that you enjoy? You already name dropped Duncan Andrade out of San Francisco State.
Right.
He's awesome. Who else you reading?
So definitely take it back to Paulo Freire. After Paulo Freire, I would say that I've Darder, Antonia Darder, and she's very well written. I think she just recently published something else. Also, I love Parker Palmer, his work. Parker Palmer not only has books and articles, he does poetry. He also does some blog posts. He does as well some and it podcasts.
All right.
His,
here we go.
His is a lot of spiritual work. So he talks a lot about spiritual work and education.
All right.
But he's definitely one of my favorites. I would have to go with Bell Hooks as well.
Okay.
In her works, and right now currently we are reading A Place of Belonging in the Multicultural Ed Seminar. Also,
that's your college course?
Yeah, that's a college course.
Uh-huh.
Who else? I'm also really feeling Duncan Andrade's work. Always, he does a lot of good work around critical pedagogy and how to integrate that. And for, you know, I think to introduce that as well, is he's doing some amazing work in Oakland and in his school, Roses. Roses from Concrete is a school he's part of and really working. And once again, it goes to show you that we can reinvent schooling. We can reinvent the education system to really benefit and be specific to the needs of a community and the needs of students.
And that's one of the reasons that I actually started the podcast. I mean, first off, I just wanted to talk to educators and about what they do and about educators that influence them. I mean, that's just always going to be there on this podcast. But I also want to talk about turning the page here on education, right? Our schools, you know, at the time that they were made, were basically set up like factories, you know, just to produce better workers And now it's really just all about, you know, getting kids into college, college going, culture, yada, yada, yada. But you still really haven't changed the design of mm-hmm. the school. So it's really tough for teachers to think about changing their pedagogy. So right. for me, that's another reason that I created this podcast, was to talk about, well, what can we do different? You know, because we have to do something different. Yeah. So that's why I asked you to name drop, because I'm hoping that people who are listening will maybe go out and read or listen to Parker Palmer or Bell Hooks or Duncan Andrade. I told you that I recently picked up the book by Dr. Chris Emden.
Yeah.
I think it's called White Folks That Teach in the For White Folks That Teach in the Hood and the Rest of Y'all Too. And it really does touch on a lot of the same things that Duncan Andrade touches mm-hmm. on too. And that is about how we perceive our students and how those get in the way of doing Absolutely. Quality work, mm-hmm. right? The behaviors that we perceive as being a bad student, like that's already affected our mindset towards mm-hmm. that kid.
Yeah.
Where that kid may actually see themselves as a good and willing student. That's just the way that they listen.
Right.
You know, if you give that kid a chance, then they might do some wonderful work. But if you throw your perception on them early and start treating them as such, well, then that pretty much goes nowhere.
Yeah. I love the teaching that Duncan Andrade introduced recently, that I heard him speak at Sweetwater at their PD, mm-hmm. their PD session. They mm-hmm. brought Duncan Andrade to speak, and he reintroduces this concept, right, which is it's an indigenous teaching, the Tezcalipoca, which is
yeah.
the smoking mirror. And this concept, though, is that as teachers, we create relationships with students we see ourselves in. And so, real quick.
Yeah. See, I've never completely understood the concept of Tezcalipoca. Mm-hmm.
So the concept of smoking mirror is really that you have to clear the smoke to see yourself, mm-hmm. right? But that you're there always. And that, so, like, for an example, you're my mirror. I just have to smoke. I have to clear that, so I see myself in you.
Okay.
Right. So if I see myself in you, I am you, and you are me. Right. And that's the concept of Tezcalipoca. Right. Is to clear the smoke, because Tezcalipoca was really, right, is that teaching, is that we're all connected kind of concept.
Okay.
But if you look at it as a teacher, right? So there's a teacher, and the teacher loves the student who sits there quietly, who raises his hand or her hand, mm-hmm. who is very obedient, right? Who does it, turns in their homework, does everything, right? And to some degree, it's because that was the teacher's life. That's who they were.
I see.
And so they see themselves in that person. It's very easy for them to love that person because they see themselves. Well, the kid that's challenging, right? The kid that is challenging the classroom structure, the curriculum, the pedagogy, everything that teacher's about, they can't see themselves. So they dislike them. They don't see themselves. So they're more, get rid of that kid, right? And mm-hmm. so the challenges of the Tezcalipoca is the smoking mirror is to clear the smoke so that you can see yourself in every student, right? Not just the ones that, right? And so I think, you know, Duncan Andrade speaks about that and a lot of individuals, but is that, and you know, for me and maybe you as well, is I love the students who provide a little more of that challenge, and maybe it's because I see myself in them. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? I love all my students, man, to tell you the truth. And it's all different students that are, man, it's been a pleasure to work with all different types of students, but the ones that have been a little bit more of a challenge in some other classrooms, I always enjoy those ones more. You know, I don't know why, man, but I do. And it's because maybe it's that smoking mirror concept, is I have an opportunity to see myself in some of them.
Yeah, it isn't necessarily the fact that I like a challenge, but no, for reals. But they can't all be good classes, man. I'd get right. bored. You know, I'm yep. like you. I need to change. I need to do something yeah. different in the realm of education.
Right.
Right. So somebody got to offer me something different. So when that kid right. comes along, at first it may rattle my cage a little bit, but I welcome it.
Right.
I welcome it, and I wake up every day glad to go in and teach all those kids. Yeah, it's tough for me because, as I mentioned before, I teach math, and there's really just not a whole lot of space for any of that kind of talk in there. I mean, there just isn't, man. Right. With today's climate, you know, after the election, I had a couple of kids ask me, you know, some questions that I didn't really necessarily feel I wanted to answer. Right. I don't necessarily feel comfortable sharing my political beliefs with my students mm-hmm. in that setting because I'm a math teacher. You know, like, what business do I have talking to you about right. Trump? You know right. what I'm saying? And so that for me lets me know that my purpose in education is not anywhere near complete because there's another space that I want to be in where I do teach kids or we talk about how to become agents of change right. in your world. And, you know, starting obviously with yourself, you know, your family and then your community, but being an agent of change, we don't teach kids that.
Right.
We're still in that factory. A lot of us are still in that factory mentality of what a school should produce.
Yep.
You know, so it's important that people like you and the others that you have name dropped are introducing that kind of discussion, that kind of pedagogy with students. How do you become an agent of change, right? Make a real difference. Is that what's important to you, man?
For sure.
I mean,
for sure. I believe in the seven generation concept, right? That we live our lives to impact the lives of seven generations to follow us.
Okay.
So it definitely deals with being an agent, right, of change. And I'm talking about, man, I'm talking about environmental change. I'm talking about social change. You know, I'm talking about change within ourselves. Mm-hmm. So multiple levels, right? It's complex. But for sure, man, I feel like, and that's where we really look at that. Once again, the eagle and the condor concept uh-huh. is how do we create spaces that nurture and feed the mind and the heart, right? And we're still in a space right now where we're still not sure how that heart looks in schools.
Okay.
We're still in a space where we're not too sure how do we deal with some of these really deep questions, man? Like, what is life, right? Uh-huh. What is uh-huh. life about, or what is this concept of purpose, right? But I do know that in my work and really, really bringing it back to the indigenous traditions, man, is that we can't neglect that concept. You know, we can't neglect those elements, or we'll continue to get exactly what we have had for a long time, right?
Right.
And so it's something new. But you know, to add something also is that I'm excited right now about taking things to new levels, man. So like a lot of people talk about project-based learning. I'm like, okay, what's next? Like, how can we take that to a whole nother level?
Right.
Right. And so I'm really interested in studying pedagogy. You know, there's a lot around technology, seeing what people are able to do with technology in classrooms with young people.
Mm-hmm.
Powerful. Right. Let's see how where else can we go with these concepts and these new pedagogical approaches. And then there's some of the old school ones, right? They're old school ways that still have a space and still have a home in our classrooms. And that's all cool, man. I think like the beauty about being a classroom teacher is to invite all those things into your classroom daily, man, to be able to be diverse in your teaching,
uh-huh.
you know? And that's one of the things I really look forward to in as an educator is being able to go into the classroom. Despite all my roles, one of my favorite role is still being able to work with young people. If it was at a high school level or middle school level or upper elementary level, right? To be able to bring in diverse pedagogical approaches okay. to get young people freaking pumped, dude, about learning topics and also engaging in dialogue and critical response approaches to be able to, you know, articulate their understanding. That stuff is dope, man. I really love watching students present. And I love watching them present where they talk more just about the top. I love watching them present the topic and how the understanding of the topic transformed their life.
Mm.
And that's where, like, I always incorporate that into my, when the students are presenting, I'll be like, okay, I want you to articulate your understanding. But at the end, I want to hear how has this understanding impacted you as a human being? What has it done for your and furthering your academics? What has it done for furthering your personal growth? And so those were, once again, right? That's how little by little I try to bring in the heart teaching the hard work, mm-hmm. right, of education is going into, okay, how is this bettering you, right? And so, but yeah, man, like I had an opportunity recently, a little example of some of my pedagogy is we had to do an assessment, and it was the end of the quarter. And so I was real with the students, and I said, hey, you have a couple, we were studying environmental justice. I need to know your understanding of these concepts. So we talked everything from Flint, Michigan, to Standing Rock. We looked at even there was a water situation in San Isidro. We looked at the maquiladora situation in Tijuana and all around environmental justice. So I came to the end. I was like, all right, I want to know what you learned, mm-hmm. you know? Like, we've been spending all this time on it, so you have some options. I could, for those of you who are feeling like this is a way you want to show your learning, I could put together a multiple choice test for you. For those of you who want to write an essay, I could put a prompt together for you. For wow. those of you who want to do a presentation, I could, I'll give it to you now. And then I told him this too. I don't know why I did it like this, but I said, if you're doing the multiple choice, no notes. You study for it, no notes. You're doing the essay, you got it.
Like that, huh?
You got the notes. And they're in ninth grade. And then I said, the presentation, whatever you got.
Right? Yeah.
And what's a trip is that I would say the majority of the students, and this is after a while working with them, chose the presentation.
Okay.
And that was more work for me, bro, because I had to sit through a grip, because I don't do them during class, because if they're class, we have to listen to a lot of the same stuff.
Okay.
So I do them with small groups of students. I pull in other students from around the school and have them listen so we have an audience.
I like that.
But I'm going to tell you, though, why I think this is my theory around why I had more students present.
Okay.
Is because they feel good about it afterwards, man. Because of those questions about how did it change them or help them, or even being for them, because it's almost even a defense, because they have to present and then people ask them questions. Everybody pretty much passes, dude, because if not, I kind of prep them. Like, I'll help them out. I'll be like, hey, show me what you got, kind of, because I don't want, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to set anybody up, man, for like trip them in the race, you know.
Yeah.
But afterwards, man, you see them like glowing. You see them, like, for whatever reason, man, like, it. Now, of course, it's the ones that chose it, you know, they chose it, but like I said, man, like, a lot of them are choosing that, or they were choosing the essay, right? And I was tripping on that stuff. I was like, damn, like, you think most of them would have been like, you know what, I want the multiple choice, I could just freaking dee. That one would have been the easiest for me to grade. That would have been the easiest, right, of all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I could have created a grade, but... But nevertheless, part of my pedagogy was, like I said, to giving them an opportunity to explore different ways they want to show their learning, and I was open to it, and I was real happy with the products.
Actually. I'm feeling that. I love the differentiation, man. So, before we jam out, what do you want to leave the listeners with? Let's assume that they are either educators or they are strongly interested in education. Let's assume. What do you want to leave my peoples with, man?
Yeah, for sure. I think I mentioned it a little bit before, but I feel like as a father as well, as a father who has kids in school, I feel like our schools have first and foremost, man, to keep young people safe.
Mm.
You know, they have a responsibility. I want to make sure that my kids go into school and being loved. I want to make sure that my kids go into school and feeling like it's a safe place.
Yeah.
I want them to feel like they can grow in multiple ways. That's my first
one.
Concern,
yeah.
And always. Secondly, I definitely want schools to continue to help our students to function in life. You know, how do we do basic things? You know, basic concepts, just to be able to function in the day in and day out world. But the third element is that I also have an expectation that the school system creates spaces for individuals to begin to learn what does transformation look like of themselves and their communities and their families and of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like education definitely needs to go in those directions. And lastly, is with that is we transform by looking at once again, a holistic approach, right? The heart and the mind, the pedagogy of the ego and the condor, as I call it, incorporating sacred purpose, incorporating issues that definitely pertain to students.
Okay.
So I would say those elements, brother, I would say that's definitely the hope for education and to continue to evolve evolve and push education to enter those realms.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
My man, Dr. Ricky Medina, it has been an absolute pleasure. It's kind of tough to find this guy because he is not on social media. He's not that kind of guy. You just got to find him in the space that he works in. Chula Vista by way of San Diego. My man, I appreciate your time.
Yep.
Thank you so much for being on the Educated Guest Podcast.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate your work, man, and I look forward to listening to many more podcasts in the future.
Yeah, man.
And
let's do it.
And all the good work of the educators that are all around, man, and that have been on the podcast.
Uh-huh.
A lot of good people.
All right, everybody, that's it. Episode 15. Book it. Dr. Ricky Medina, get at us. Zaref, get at me at them Twitters. Peace. Accept everything that you're telling us. What are you selling us? The creator dwelling us. I sit in your unknown class while you're failing us. I failed your class because I ain't with your reasoning. You're trying to make me you by seasoning. Up my mind with C. Jane Run.